ॐ नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 5, Frustration of the Sacrifice of Daksha. Text number 1. Maitreya Uvacha.
Maitreya Uvacha.
Bhavo Bhavanya Nidanam Prajapate. Asat. Pritoya avagamya narada. Svaparshada shainyam chathat advar Svaparshad shainyam chathat advar arbubhir. Vidravitam krodham aparamadadhe.
Vidravitam krodham aparamadadhe.
Maitreya Uvacha.
Maitreya Uvacha.
Maitreya said.
Maitreya said.
Bhavaha.
Bhavaha.
Lord Shiva.
Shiva.
Bhavanyaha.
Bhavanyaha.
Of Sati.
Sati.
Nidhanam.
Nidhanam.
The death.
The death.
Prajapate.
Prajapate.
Because of Prajapati Daksha. Asat Kritayaha.
Asat Kritayaha.
Having been insulted.
Having been insulted.
Avagamya.
Avagamya.
Hearing about.
Hearing about.
Narada.
Narada.
From Narada.
From Narada.
Svaparshada
Sainyam.
The soldiers of his own associates.
The soldiers of his own associates.
Cha.
Cha.
And.
And.
Tat Advara.
Tat Advara.
Produced from.
His.
Dakshas.
Dakshas.
Sacrifice.
Sacrifice.
Ribhubhihi.
Ribhubhihi.
By the ribus.
By the ribus.
Vidravitam.
Vidravitam.
We're driven away.
We're driven away.
Krodham.
Krodham.
Anger.
Anger.
Aparam.
Aparam.
Unbounded.
Unbounded.
Adadhe.
Adadhe.
Showed.
Showed.
Maitreya said, when Lord Shiva heard from Narada that Sati, his wife, was now dead because of Prajapati Daksha's insult to her, and that his soldiers had been driven away by the Ribhu demigods, he became greatly angry. Purport. Lord Shiva understood that Sati, being the youngest daughter of Daksha, could present the case of Lord Shiva's purity of purpose and would thus be able to mitigate the misunderstanding between Daksha and himself. But such a compromise was not attained, and Sati was deliberately insulted by her father by not being received properly when she visited his house without being invited. Sati herself could have killed her father, Daksha, because she is the personified material energy and has immense power to kill and create within this material universe. In the Brahma Samhita, her strength is described. She is capable of creating and dissolving many universes. But although she is so powerful, she acts under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, as his shadow. It would not have been difficult for Sati to punish her father, but she thought that since she was his daughter, it was not proper for her to kill him. Thus, she decided to give up her own body, which she had obtained from his. And Daksha did not even check her. When Sati passed away, giving up her body, the news was conveyed by Narada to Lord Shiva. Narada always carries the news of such events because he knows their import. When Lord Shiva heard that his chaste wife, Sati, was dead, he naturally became exceedingly angry. He also understood that Bhrigu Muni had created the Ribhudev demigods by uttering the mantras of the Yajurveda, and that these demigods had driven away all of his soldiers who were present in the arena of sacrifice. Therefore, he wanted to reply to this insult, and thus he decided to kill Daksha because he was the cause of the death of Sati. Om Agyana Timirandasya Ginanjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupakada Maheyam Tadanti Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. Offences. Daksha Daksha's enmity and ultimately envy of Lord Shiva led him to behave in a fashion that was contrary to his position in many ways. He's a Prajapati, so he's a father. He's like a father. And generally, parents tolerate the deficiencies of their children. Generally. Or at some point in time, they have to tolerate the deficiencies of their children. Right? You have to live with it. We start off with high hopes, right? And then gradually they're dismantled over time. But still, the parent is naturally the shelter of the child. And that relationship it's natural, it's almost sacred. I saw it with my mother when my mother was alive, and I would visit my parents and stay with them, and my mother always wanted to cook for us, and because she wasn't aware of the rules and regulations of the Vaishnavas. She had affection for her son, natural affection, and I realized that after a while that she wasn't just being a nuisance, but she just had that natural affection, because she liked to make my bed or wash my clothes and do the ironing. She just liked to do it, and it was just natural for her. It's a natural show of affection, and you couldn't stop her from doing it. So she just liked to cook, and my mum used to. Eventually, my mum would, because my mother was quite a good cook, from a material estimation of things, right? But she soon discovered that Ajahn Rupa is a good cook too, right? So she used to help. Eventually, she would help Ajahn Rupa cook for us. And I caught her one time tasting the. She was tasting something. She was tasting, and I said, "What are you doing?" And my dad said, "She's just checking it to see if it's okay to offer to Krishna." So, but the point is, there's that natural affection that a parent has for their children, right? Mothers especially, but also fathers. My father still likes to give us money every... I was telling Prishni the other day, I've got some money that my father gave me. She's like, "You don't take money from your father." And I said, "In our culture, you take money from your parents." We grew up taking money from our parents. Well, not taking, but giving our... My grandma used to always... I've mentioned this before. My grandma always used to send a guinea for my birthday when I was very young. I had a bank account. I didn't even know what a bank account was. All I knew, I had money, but I couldn't spend it. So, we're kind of... When it's your birthday, then people give you things. When it's Christmas, then your parents give you things. It's the culture. Not that you do austerities on your birthday, but you're spoilt on your birthday. Slightly different culture to the Vedic culture, right? Not slightly, very different. Just like I remember one time I was sitting in the member services office, and a young girl came on her 21st birthday, and she gave a $500 donation to the temple on behalf of her father. And I was thinking, "Whoa, that's weird. My dad gives me $500. And she's giving $500 to the temple." So this is piety. On your birthday, you make some sacrifice. But in a Western culture, we're taught you're worshipped on your birthday. Which is okay if you're a pure devotee, but if you're not, that's kind of indulgent. It's indulgent. But that's a natural tendency of the parents, especially the grandparents, but also the parents, to indulge the children. Right? You spoil your children, don't you? Uh, Because sometimes if you're a parent, you also have to be a little firm. Grandparents can be lenient, parents have to be a bit tougher. But at the same time, there's a lot of affection. And you know, and usually that, if there's some disciplining, that disciplining is done out of affection. Right? the motivation for disciplining a child is for their benefit. You don't let the children play on the street. Right? Don't let them play on the highway. So sometimes children want to do things that are not good for them, and so the parents then have to discipline them. But that's also motivated by affection. So, but here we see that despite the fact, and she's, Sati is the youngest daughter, right? So the youngest daughter would ordinarily be spoiled, even, right? Spoiled, because not only do they have the affection of the parents and the grandparents and so forth, but they also have the affection of all of the other siblings. This is a natural situation. So that's not happening here. That hasn't happened. Because Daksha was not able to see the internal character of Lord Shiva, but saw him from an external point of view. Firstly, that he was the father-in-law. I'm the father-in-law, so therefore you should respect me, right? And even Prabhupada describes Lord Shiva niggardly, right? Niggardly dressed, right? So, you know, Prajapati Daksha is a very elevated, influential, powerful personality amongst the demigods and worshipped in very opulent ways by his followers, has many followers, being a Prajapati, many, a big family. And Lord Shiva's followers are all hobgoblins and bhutas and pretas and you know, the lowest of the humans, basically, or even just subhumans, right? So, in comparison, you know, we see there's a gap of opulence, if you like, between Daksha and Shiva. And so Daksha thinks himself as being superior to Lord Shiva, without being able to measure the compassion and the realization that the vision that Lord Shiva has. He's not able to perceive that, right? Because he's not very advanced. Actually, he's elevated, as we know, because he saw Lord Vishnu. But he's a Prakriti Bhakta. Prakriti Bhakta means, or Kanishta Bhakta means, not able to recognize the advancement of others, right? And Kanishta Adhikari tends to think of themselves as being the best devotee, right? The most advanced, and they worship the Lord, especially in the temple. They worship the deity. But it's hard for them to see the Lord within everyone. That the Lord is situated anywhere other than on the altar, right? Not being within everybody's hearts, and seeing everybody equally. They tend to see from the material platform. We see that Lord Shiva's seen as Daksha seeing him as fallen, where actually it's the opposite, it's the reverse. The situation is actually the reverse. And I mentioned this before, but because Lord Shiva was being worshipped by everybody and receiving respect, that Daksha felt that he should be afforded. When he came to the sacrificial arena, Daksha came or Lord Shiva came? Daksha came, and Lord Shiva didn't stand up, right? Then Daksha got offended. He was offended. Whereas Lord Shiva is described, previously he's described as the, what's one of the names given to Lord Shiva that indicate his exalted position? Huh? In the verses just last week. His name Jagat Guru, right? Jagat Guru, he's described as Jagat Guru. What does that mean? Jagat Guru. Spiritual master of the world? What about Jagat's more than the world, isn't it? It's the whole universe. Yeah? He's the guru of the whole universe. That's why everybody's bowing down to him, because he's such an exalted personality. So because of his envy of Lord Shiva, his inability, his Kanishta mentality, exalted, because Kanishta Adhikari is an exalted position. It's a person who chants Krishna's name. Anybody who chants Krishna's name is exalted, the best amongst men, but not necessarily the best amongst the devotees. Right? You know, sometimes people say, "Oh, we're all equal." Right? We're all equal, although we're not, obviously. Right? When I look at all of you, I see everybody's different. Huh? We got women on this side and men on that side. There's a difference, right? There's 80 years old and there's 18 years old, right? And or everything in between, right? We got white bodies, we've got brown bodies, we've got, you know, everything, everybody's different. And even from the spiritual point of view, Rupa Goswami encourages us to see devotees in their different stages of advancement in devotion. Right? We know that Lord Shiva and Sati are very exalted. They're beyond Uttama, because they have their own special positions as expansions of the Lord. separated expansions. Lord Shiva is the guna avatar, right, of Tamagun. He's the master of the mode of ignorance, Tamaguna. And Sati, it's mentioned here, is the personification of the material energy. Right? He's the one responsible for keeping us all under control. Right? By her allurements. So we're all allured or enamored by the material energy. Right? We dovetail it in Krishna's service, but we're still enamored by it. Right? Women are enamored by men and vice versa. Right? We're all chasing money. Who's not chasing money? Right? Lord Shiva's not chasing money. Right? He likes to just chant Hare Krishna. Say, for example, there's a good example. That's a symptom of a devotee. Likes to chant. Actually, if we want to determine how advanced a devotee is, then we look at how attached they are to chanting Hare Krishna. This is explained by Haridas Thakur, right? Of course, we see that with Lord Shiva. He's deeply absorbed in his meditation. And he's chanting the names of the Lord. So, we're encouraged to recognize the various symptoms of a Vaishnava. And it can be tricky because a Kanishtha Adhikari can get away with devotional practice based on their material attributes. No? This is interesting. Achintya Rupa is teaching a Brahman course to the new Brahmanas. We probably should have all gone to that class, actually, but it's another. No, that would have been too big. Too many. But and as a result of preparing that course, we were looking at the qualities of a Kanishtha Adhikari, Madhyam Adhikari, or intermediate devotee, and Uttama, topmost. So we've got the beginners, intermediate, and the top. And there's a big range there's a big spectrum of qualifications of devotees. But we were, in one place, Srila Prabhupada mentions that a Kanishtha Adhikari may be identified as somebody more advanced than they actually are, because their material qualifications are mistaken for spiritual advancement. That's interesting, isn't it? So, for example, you may have a good memory, and so you're able to remember Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, and you're able to recite them. And people go, but it's just because you've got a good memory. You may not have actually realised those. It's not that those pastimes are automatically playing in, you know, it's a movie going on in your heart. You've just got a good memory. Of course, there's nothing wrong with that. It's not a bad thing. Anything that we use in Krishna's service is... But the thing is, we need to recognize the spiritual qualifications as opposed to the material qualifications that a person might have. It's important. And so therefore we're encouraged to, or we're recommended to know and to understand what the qualifications are and be able to see them in others. And we're encouraged to, if we're on the Kanishta platform, to quickly move to the Madhyam platform. Because on the Madhyam platform, instead of fighting with the devotees, but we make friends with them. But which is the difference. This, Lord Shiva was not making friends with the devotees. But Lord Shiva is obviously a devotee. And instead of being inimical or being envious of him, should have been friendly. How can I serve you? Right? Especially he's the husband of his daughter. You would think that he'd be flattering and appreciative. Right? Usually people are. When your daughter is married and you found a qualified husband, then you look after him. Right? Otherwise you might find your daughter back on your doorstep. Huh? Isn't that how it works in India? Huh? Yeah. You're now in that family, you're not part of my family. Huh? Husband, the fathers feel great relief when they've married their daughters. It's a big headache for them. Until their daughter's married, then their life is not peaceful. Huh? It's a big responsibility. So you would think, ordinarily, if the father's affectionate to the daughter, then he'll be affectionate to the son-in-law. Isn't it? That's natural. My dad loves my wife. He's more affectionate to my wife than he is to me. Huh? So it's natural. This is natural, but it's not being shown here. And if Daksha was an advanced devotee, then that's the behaviour that we would see if he's at least a Madhyam Bhakta. But because he's a Kanishta and he thinks he's the best devotee, then he's fighting with the other devotees. We see that sometimes in ISKCON. Huh? The devotees don't want to be told what to do. Huh? They're uncooperative. We tell them what the rules and regulations are for worshipping the deity. We have a deity worship manual, and then they go and write their own manual. Which may change from day to day, depending on how they're feeling. You know, especially standards of cleanliness, just little things, standards of cleanliness. Huh? Especially the mothers with children and parents with children don't like it that they can't go into the paraphernalia room because their children are moochy. Right? They think, well, it's okay if I go into the paraphernalia room, even though I've just been coddling my moochy kid. Right? So, a Kanishta Adhikari thinks, I'm okay, I'm moochy, but I'm pure also. Right? And so I can do what I like. It's always a headache for that. For the people who have to enforce the standards, right? To maintain the purity of the deity worship, the deity paraphernalia room is an extension of the deity room, and the deity room is practically Vaikuntha, and so we only enter in Vaikuntha when we're purified, Shuddha. And so we have, there's activities of purification done. And cuddling your kids is an activity of moochification. Right? And what can we do about it? It's not that we don't like children, we love children. But while they're moochy and young and moochy, so are we. And so therefore we worship the deity from a distance, darshan or whatever. It's just a simple standard. But for some reason or other, we think, nah, these rules and regulations don't apply to me. Right? My child's a pure devotee. This is the affection of the parent towards the child. So they're thinking, they're saying, oh, he's a pure devotee. And I'm a pure devotee too. So it's okay if I go into the deity room or the paraphernalia room. They won't go in the deity room, but they'll go in the paraphernalia room. Huh? It's just an example. Small example of how sometimes we get things out of perspective. It's a little thing. But the issue is that seva aparads multiplied become nama aparads. And so we have to try to, we should always maintain a high standard of deity worship. And that means keeping a high standard of cleanliness. If we're going into the paraphernalia room, then we should always be wearing, we should have had a shower, we should have, same with the kitchen. We should wear, we should have a shower. We should put on tilak. We should put on clean clothes. This is the standard of entering Krishna's kitchen, because that also is an extension of the deity room. And so it's also Vaikuntha. So, you know, one of the reasons why we've initiated the standards. Of course, there are standards of cleanliness, like keeping your head covered. Even the health department, you know, it's a accepted responsibility for everybody who goes in any kitchen in Victoria, and probably in Australia, you keep your head covered. Right? So there's some things that are specified by health authorities that we should follow. Right? And wearing proper shoes and clean clothes and clean shoes. Right. That maintains the atmosphere of cleanliness. And Prabhupada says, cleanliness is godliness. Right? Usually it's cleanliness is next to godliness, but Prabhupada says, no, cleanliness is godliness. Right? So we're obliged to abide by certain regulations, standards. Yet, for some reason or other, when we try to establish these, then there's always somebody who thinks, oh, I don't have to do that. And in one sense, it's symptomatic of our rebellion against Krishna. I don't have to do what Krishna tells me to do. I can do what I like. Because I'm an advanced devotee. There's a Kanishtha. You can see how this Kanishtha mentality comes out in simple things. But it's there. We see it. Whereas, you know, the service attitude of a devotee is, I'll do whatever is required to serve Krishna properly. Right? If something is meant to be, if it's worth doing and it's worth doing for Krishna, then I should do it to the best of my capacity. I have to be reminded of this, of these. We have to remind ourselves of these principles of attention to detail. Right? And Prabhupada set up ISKCON in such a way so that if the temple authorities, the management of the temple asks us to do something, we should do it. If we don't do it, we're showing our Kanishtha mentality by saying, oh, I don't have to do that. I can do what I like. I'm more advanced than you. And so therefore I can. But the Madhyam Bhakta doesn't do that. The Madhyam Bhakta works cooperatively. Huh? And, the management of a temple is not a material thing. You know, some people think, oh, management, oh, it's all, you know, just a bunch of materialist controllers. Right? Huh? Just power freaks. And sometimes, you know, managers are like that. But that's not how Prabhupada saw it. Prabhupada gave positions of authority to individuals and he respected those positions. Because otherwise, in an organization, if we don't have a leadership structure, what do we got? What do we got? It's a word that starts with A.
Anarchy.
Huh? Anarchy. Anarchy, yes. Anarchy. No organization. Everybody's a paramahamsa. And they can do what they like. And then what have you got? You've got chaos. Whereas, and that's what's happening here. This is a good example. Daksha's not advanced enough to acknowledge Lord Shiva's superior position, endowed upon him by his exalted personality, and recognized by Krishna. That's why he's a representative of Krishna, and he's a guna avatar. It's like, you know, this is beyond exalted. Lord Shiva is beyond exalted. Right? He's a guna avatar, a representative of the Lord himself. So yes, Daksha is exalted and a worshipful demigod. But at the same time, as we see from time to time with the demigods, they manifest symptoms of pride and influenced by the material energy. Even we see Lord Shiva being bewildered. But interesting to note, that was a leela of Lord Vishnu. So he was bewildered by Lord Vishnu himself, not by the material energy. A very special circumstance. Just in one sense, that shows really who's boss, right? In the whole scheme of things. But still, Lord Shiva is very exalted, and Sati also. So Prabhupada mentions here, Sati is powerful enough, potent enough, and her relationship with her father should have ensured that she'd be able to pacify him when she went home. But because of Daksha's enmity towards Lord Shiva, that and envy, right, that pride, that overwhelmed or overrode his natural tendency to protect and to show affection and care for his daughter. Right? And interesting to note that Sati was so disappointed and so detached, she's so detached, that so elevated, that she being disgusted with the behavior of her father, was able to give up the body that he'd given her, right? Because of that connection with her, that material connection, she just didn't want to have it. Anything to do with that body. That's amazing. What renunciation. What? And so she was insulted, and as a result of that insult, she gave up the body. Well, okay. If you're going to behave like that, then I renounce you. And that means renouncing the body. That is pretty... exceptional, to say the least. I'm sure there are many daughters who have been offended by their fathers. Maybe all daughters have been offended by their father at some point in time. Is that right? Yep. You don't have to tell us now, but just in case your father might find out. But and here Prabhupada said she's so powerful she could have destroyed her father. right? Because she's the personification of the material energy. Huh? Has your father ever been so annoying that you felt like he should be destroyed? Huh? So, but interesting point here, and this is the point of a, this is a mood of a devotee, that Prabhupada makes a point that sati is the shadow of the spiritual, and she's the personification of the material energy, and the material energy is a shadow of the material of the spiritual energy, right? That's why everything in the material world looks so real and has substance, because it's actually a reflection of the spiritual world. We're living in the material world and it all looks real and attractive, and because it's a valid reflection or manifestation even of the spiritual. This is why we get attracted to it, because it, the reality of the material world comes from the potency that's endowed within it by the material energy, working under Krishna's direction. Right? That's a difficult one for us to accommodate, because we see that everything's orchestrated and sorted out by Krishna. Ishvaraha sarvabhutanam hridesha arjuna tishtati brahmayan sarvabhutanam jantra rudhani mayaya. Krishna says, I'm situated within everybody's heart. I'm directing the wanderings of everybody who is situated as if on a machine made of the material energy. So the material energy is working under Krishna's direction, because he's saying, I'm directing the wanderings of everybody. But it's all been orchestrated by Maya. Right? And that's sati. Right? And because it's not Krishna's, she could have destroyed her father. Right? But because that wasn't because she was his daughter, she didn't think it was appropriate to kill her father. But just eat like a young girl might think, oh, I wish you were dead, when her father's telling her what to do. Then, but she really wouldn't kill her father. Right? Even though she was capable, she didn't. But she gave up her own body. And the reason why, one of the reasons why Lord Shiva is upset is because he should have stopped her. He shouldn't have been behaving in such a way that she felt like she should destroy her, you know, not destroy, but leave her body. The father should have been, his natural role is to protect his daughter. But he just allowed his daughter to kill herself. Effectively, that's the external. Amongst other things. And Narada Muni, who, you know, is a bit of a transcendental, what's the word? In school, we used to call them stirrers, but that might not be a nice term for. Narada Muni likes to stir things up a little bit, huh? Because you know, when he went to Kamsa and told him, you know, he likes to agitate the pot a little bit, get things, mix the khichdi up. Right? So, you know, it's done in a positive way, also to facilitate Krishna's pastimes. Right? So he's part of the whole, he's part of that. It's a stirrer. Right? That's what a stirrer does. That's why we call them stirrers. So, but Narada Muni understood the, you know, the Prabhupada says here, the import, the importance of all of this. This is important. And he knew that Lord Shiva, because Sati is a great devotee, Lord Shiva is a great devotee, so naturally he's going to be upset that she was set upon by her own father's ignorance. Instead of looking after and protecting the interests of his daughter and being respectful to her husband who's looking after his daughter, which is the normal role of a father. Huh? Did your daughter get married yet, Ananda Balava? Your daughter got married yet? Are you respectful to your son-in-law? Yeah. You're respectful to him. At the same time, you're keeping an eye on him, right? Yeah. It's okay. This is natural. But not envying him. Not envying, which is what Daksha is envying Lord Shiva. And so what we're seeing now is there'll be an escalation of the animosity between the followers of Lord Shiva and the supporters of the demigods. Bhrigu Muni was trying to preserve the sanctity of the Jagya. Right, so he created the Ribhu demigods to counteract the attack of Lord Shiva's followers. Right? And from here on in, I think things get quite messy. It's a sacrifice, all right. There's all sorts of things are going to happen here, so it's going to be very... But interesting to note that Prajapati Daksha is demonstrating some of these symptoms of a Kanishta Adhikari. Lord Shiva becomes angry, and Prabhupada does mention that anger in the nectar of instruction, anger can be used in the service of the Lord. When there's an offence committed towards a devotee or towards the Lord, then a devotee can use that anger to protect the interests of the Lord. Right? There's that famous, or at least interesting, I should say, maybe not famous, but interesting analysis where Prabhupada says we can use typewriters, we can use microphones, we can use motor cars, we can use aeroplanes, we can use printing presses. Right? And then he says, and missiles, right? In the service of the Lord. Right? So that's a broad, you know, that's a very broad perspective. Because usually we think, oh, Shanti, Shanti, you know, you're a devotee, be peaceful, Prabhu. Huh? But Prabhupada makes the point, if you look at the most famous narratives that are worshipped by the Vaishnavas, what are they? What are they? There's two. One starts with a R, the other one starts with a M.
Renunciation?
No, two narratives, two stories. Huh? Yeah, the Ramayana and the Mahabharata. And what are they culminating? What's the high point in the Mahabharata and the Ramayana? Huh? battle. Yeah, big fight. Right? So are we pacifists or what? Well, this is a big mistake, you know, that the young men used to make when they'd see the Harinam party in the 70s, right? And the sailors and the soldiers especially, you know, they see the devotees chanting Hare Krishna, they think, oh, a bunch of pansies, look, they're all wearing sheets, you know, dressed like girls. And so they'd pick on them. Little did they know that there would be a couple of plain clothes devotees walking behind Harinam party who would pull them into an alley and fix them up. Huh? So, you know, the Hare Krishna's Hare Krishna, you know, blissful and smiling, but if there's a fight, some devotees used to like to go on Harinam because it was an opportunity to have a fight. Huh? Huh? What do you think of that idea? We'll go on Harinam and we'll actually go on out to have a fight. You know, the anger can be used in Krishna's service. It's a natural emotion that difficult to suppress, especially if in a circumstance here we see Lord Shiva, who's naturally responding to the negative, the pressure and the abuse, really, the harassment in one sense that she experienced from her father. Like it's a, you know, if you in the workplace you have a huddle, right, and you talk about somebody else. And then you leave them out. Right? It's workplace bullying. That's bullying. So Sati was bullied by her father. Normally he would be affectionate to his daughter, his youngest daughter. But he didn't invite her to the sacrifice. And it was a big deal. Everybody else in the family was invited. Right? Everybody else was going. They were all talking about it. It was a universal. It was a big party. Right? The whole universe knew about it. All the demigods were talking about it, and everybody was going. And she didn't get an invitation because of her relationship with Lord Shiva. So she was isolated. So she was being, you know, you can put pressure on people just by ignoring them. Right? In English, we call it sending somebody to Coventry, right? Sending somebody to Coventry means you all deliberately, we're not going to talk to that person. And so you isolate them. So it's a form of, you know, pressurizing them. So she was experiencing that isolation and that neglect, if you like, abuse by neglect, by omission, you know. Sometimes it's not what we do, it's what we don't do. Right? It's not that I wasn't respectful, but I just ignored him. No, I didn't. And this is what people say, I didn't do anything. Right? I didn't do anything. But that's exactly, you, by not doing something, that was the wrong thing to do. Right? So it's an act of omission that's offensive. Not just. It's not that we're offensive by the things that we do. We can also be offensive by the things that we don't do. And you can learn those lessons the hard way. Right? I've learned that many times. And not being respectful. You know, Daksha should have been respectful to his daughter. First of all, she should have got an invitation. But if you imagine, if your father throws a big party, right? And then you know all of your brothers and sisters got an invitation, but you didn't get one. How are you going to feel? Huh? Yeah. Everybody else is buying a new sari, right? Or two, to go to the party. Huh? And you didn't even get an invitation. It's like, and then you turn up. Huh? And you're just completely ignored. So Lord Shiva didn't, that was offensive, that by neglect, by neglecting his daughter, Daksha, and motivated by envy and animosity, instead of acting in his role or performing his duty as a father and, you know, looking after his youngest daughter, he offended her so much that she decided to quit her body. And he didn't stop her. So Lord Shiva's, he can see things as they are, despite the fact that he might be, you know, the master of Tamagun. He's not influenced by Tamagun. He looks after it. And he's merciful to those who are affected by Tamagun. He could see the inappropriateness of Lord, of Daksha's behaviour. Right? And so therefore he got angry. So sometimes we see, even amongst the society of devotees, because otherwise you can say, shanti, shanti, it's cool, it's okay, you know, don't get so upset. Right? But it's natural for Lord Shiva to be upset by the behaviour of Daksha, and appropriate for him to be upset and to then act on that. We see that with Lord Chaitanya when Lord Nityananda was hit by Jagaya and Madhaya, then he became furious, right? And he wanted to, he came and showed his Vishnu form and was going to chop off their heads with his Sudarshan Chakra. But Lord Nityananda said to him, look, this is not appropriate. You've forgotten that this is Kali Yuga. Right? If you were to manifest your Vishnu form in Kali Yuga, then we'd all be finished. Right? Everybody has that there. And in fact, we know at the end of Kali Yuga, Kalki comes and chops off everybody's heads because that's it. Finished. Right? No hopers completely. Disqualified, so, and that's mercy, again, right? Mercy. So, Lord Vishnu has four weapons, right? Or four items of paraphernalia, and they're all extensions of his mercy, doya. Right? We've got up here, Kon, Shank, Chakra. Pada, Padma, isn't it? And Gada. Yeah. So, two weapons. He distributes his mercy. Or off with his head. So, there are occasions when the response from a devotee is strong. Well, strong. But is still considered to be part of their mercy. Just like Krishna. He's kissing the gopis and he's sucking the life air out of Putana, right? Is the same affection, if you like, or kripa, mercy, manifest in different ways, right? Even it's mentioned in the first canon of the Bhagavatam how when Bhishma Dev was attacking Krishna and shooting arrows at him, right? This is an interesting one. The marks on his body, which is a purely spiritual body, right? Can't be destroyed by matter. Yet he was being struck by the arrows of Bhishma. And in the purport, Prabhupada mentions that Krishna accepted those arrows with the same mood of affection as he did the love bites of the gopis. Isn't that amazing? So, this is really bewildering for some people, even for the devotees, you know. How is it that Krishna's accepting the shots of Bhishma Dev's arrows as a show of his devotion, love? They were accepted as his offering of love. Woo! So we're not against arrows. We're not even against anger. Huh? Because sometimes, you know, we see a devotee and we think, what's he getting so uptight about? You know? What is it? What's that? There's that verse in the 14th chapter. Na sochati na kankshati. What's the first line of that? Sarva Buddha? Prasanatma, yeah, Prasanatma. Peace, man. Na sochati na kankshati. Don't get hung up. Right? Don't be attached. Yeah, you're just. Sometimes devotees will say that to you. You're just attached. Well, yes, we are attached. We're attached to looking after Krishna's devotees. We're attached to doing Krishna's service properly. We're attached to keeping the temple clean. Yeah, we're attached. We are attached. Huh? Just like that reminds me of, you know, when Madhavendra Puri was leaving his. No, Ishvara Puri was leaving his body, wasn't it? Right? And then he was lamenting. Ishvara Puri. Huh? Madhavendra Puri. Ishvara Puri was his disciple. Yeah, that's right. Madhavendra Puri was leaving his body and he was reciting those verses about how he was in the mood of Srimati Radharani, and he was lamenting that in the mood of Srimati Radharani that he couldn't attain the association. She couldn't attain the association of Krishna in Mathura. Krishna had left Vrindavan and she couldn't get his association anymore. So in that mood, Madhavendra Puri was reciting these verses from the Bhagavatam, and then Ishvara Puri came and he was crying. And then Ishvara Puri came along and said, you know, Brahma Buddha Prasanatma Nasochati Nakanchati. Don't lament, right? You shouldn't be lamenting. Because sometimes people see the devotees are enthusiastic about something or they become emotional about something. I know devotees used to see Korma when Korma would get really wound up about something, right? And he would yell at people and stuff, and they thought, whoa. I mean, it's not cool, but at the same time, it showed how much absorption and how much affection and how much determination and effort he was putting into making a nice offering for Krishna. Huh? So he's getting upset when people come along and make things dirty or, you know, just don't look after things properly, look after Krishna's paraphernalia properly, get upset. And people would mistake that emotion for something material. Huh? So, he's always getting upset. But why is he getting upset? That's a symptom of actually an advanced devotee. You get my point? Huh? It's not just a mundane material. So devotees get upset about things. Even Prabhupada, you know, mentions how in his fight with to acquire the Juhu property, right? He prayed. He said, "I prayed to Lord Nrisimhadev to, you know, fix up Mr. N." Huh? Huh? I was wondering, he's a devotee. Why is he, you know, he's meant to be working for the benefit of everybody. Why does he want to kill that person? Huh? Because he's attached to his service to Krishna. And he's attached to chanting Hare Krishna. So this is where one has to learn how to see. Even we see in the Ramayana and in the Mahabharata, we see that Arjuna, despite the fact that he's slaughtered millions of people, he is worshipped for his dedication and devotion to Krishna. Right? Ordinarily, if somebody's going around killing millions of people, say, ooh, what's wrong with this guy? But not only was he killing, he was being encouraged by Krishna. Right? That's a real puzzle for people. Ooh, hang on. We're worshipping a god who encourages people to go out and kill others. Right? And we see that in the behaviour of some extremist religious organisations. You know, they say, yeah, we're doing you benefit by killing you, and we think, oh, what are they doing? Yet if we look at what Arjuna's doing, that's what he's doing, right? So it's a bit of a puzzle. It's a puzzle. Just like Lord Shiva seeing Daksha seeing Lord Shiva, and he can't work him out, can't understand his exalted personality, right? And so sometimes the devotees. And this is why one has to become a Madhyama Adhikari quickly, is to be able to see the internal motivations and the internal spiritual character of a devotee, lest we are bewildered by the external material manifestation of that person. The externals are not always, sometimes yes, but not always an indication of the devotee's bhakti. Huh? So, you know, when Prabhupada says we can use missiles in Krishna's service, we go, hey, what? When are we going to be doing that? When's that service going to be on the roster? Huh? But I've seen it. Actually, I've seen it. There were when we joined the temple, it was after the deprogrammers were active. And The deprogrammers were usually a bunch of thugs, basically. They were criminals, standover merchants, what they'd done is they'd said to the devotees, "We know," they said to Balaram and Korma, they said, "We know a bunch of people who are out to get you, huh? But if you pay us some money, we'll keep them away." This is a classical standover merchant tactic. Because they're the ones who are harassing you, actually, not somebody else. They just want your money. And because Raja Lakshmi and other devotees were being kidnapped by these people and brainwashed and taken away for brainwashing. So when we joined, it was at the tail end of these things going on. And I remember there was a roster and a few devotees would stay up all night guarding the temple because these people were threatened. And it came to pass that one morning, and it was about 2 weeks after I joined the temple in September 1978, and the Brahmachari ashram was upstairs. This was all partitioned rooms. But the bathroom was out the back. So we used to get up and then in our gumchas run down to the back. There used to be a competition who could get to the warm shower first. Because there was only one warm shower, I think. And there was three cold, or two warm and two cold. And there was also a competition to see who could get up the earliest and get there around. In fact, there was a joke that Atmarama would, in order to be the quickest, he would run past the fish pond and wet his toothbrush in the fish pond so he could put the toothpaste on. So by the time he was in. So it's a transcendental competition amongst the devotees. So, but it was about we used to get up at 3:10, or we used to get up quite early. And I remember it was about 3:45. Cormor had already been up. He was in his room, which was just up here. And these guys had come, these fellows had come, and they shot a shotgun through the front window of Prabhupada's room, and then they shot another, and I was just walking up the stairs, and I heard this big bang. I thought, what the hell, what's going on here? Huh? And Cormor had been in the room, and he was standing behind one of the pillars, and the shotgun pellets had blown the windows and everything. Huh? And so it wasn't that long ago that we were, you know, the devotees were arming themselves. Another night they came around, and I think Gaura Gopal jumped over the fence with an axe, with a pick handle, and then he smashed. Huh? Was it?
Yeah.
And he smashed the window of their car, right? Freaked the guy. They never come. I think that was it. They left after that because they knew that. Yeah. I could tell a story about the time that you caught those guys breaking into my car, Gianna. That's a funny one. But anyway, you know. The devotees were defending the temple. These people were serious. Huh? They were trying to extort money from us, and that's why they were shooting at us. And they were saying, well, we know somebody who's trying to get you, but it was them who were doing it. Right? So after Gaura Gopal jumped out of over the fence and smashed the window of their car, they didn't come back again. So things are relatively peaceful these days. A lot less exciting, to be honest. You know, we've struggled to acquire respectability, right? But respectability's boring. It's better to be an outlaw, in one sense. It's much more exciting. But mind you, you know, there are still exciting things to be done as devotees. Huh? There's still just like last night, we had an exciting time on Harinam. Huh? That's where the excitement is. It's just amazing to see, you know, we're chanting Hare Krishna, and then people just walk down the street, and as they get closer to the Harinam party, their smile just goes. They can't stop themselves. Huh? And even the kids, you see the little kids, they're coming from down the corner of Collins Street and Swanson Street up to, you know, they're walking up to Burke Street. And the little kids, they just start dancing. The parents are pretty blown out because here's their little 2-year-old kid. They see the Harinam party and the kid's just dancing. They just want to get into it. So that's exciting when you see how naturally people spontaneously respond to the Harinam. You know, if you want to experience excitement, right, that's really where it's at. Huh? That's really where it's at. In this day and age, there's still plenty of excitement to be had in the Hare Krishna movement. Right? It's not fighting over the maha. That's a kanishta adhikari. Or, as Korma would say, that's a kanista adhikari. A kanista adhikari is only interested in the maha that he can get. But a Madhyam Adhikari is one who's concerned about how much maha he can distribute, and especially in the form of the holy name. That's really so satisfying and so encouraging and so powerful, because, you know, we want to make spiritual advancement for ourselves, but we're members of the Sankirtan movement, and the Sankirtan movement, even Krishna says himself, there's no one more dear to me than who gives this knowledge to others, right? And how better can we expose people to bhakti, to the experience of bhakti, than by Harinam Sankirtan? It's one of the most efficient and effective, it is the most efficient and effective way of exposing people to the bhakti environment, to the bhakti experience. Where else or how else do we get people to experience our culture, the culture of Krishna consciousness, other than through Harinam Sankirtan? How are we going to do it? There is another way. What's the other way? Or two other ways. Book distribution. Yeah, and prasadam distribution, yes. Especially in Australia. That's part of our culture, right? Bhunkte bo jayate chaiva. Receiving prasadam, distributing prasadam. One of the six items of exchange, bhakti exchanges. But the experience of devotees chanting Hare Krishna and relishing, because when you're chanting Hare Krishna, then you're relishing the prema bhakti. Because sometimes you start off on Harinam and you're on the mental platform. Have you ever experienced that? Have you experienced it? You go out and you think, I told this story the other day about how there was five or six of us in Perth, and I realised that we were all over 50. We used to be all under 25, but now we're all over 50. Right? And I'm thinking, oh no, here we are, us old codgers, going out on Harinam. Who's going to take it seriously? Right? But by the time we got around Hay Street and down the mall, and we had everybody's fully absorbed in the kirtan. So when you become absorbed in the kirtan, you forget about the fact that you're 50 or whatever. You just start acting on the spiritual. Even fools like us can act on the spiritual, be fully absorbed on the spiritual platform in the sankirtan party, right? Because you move. The holy name is so powerful, and this is why in Kali Yuga we have it's the Yuga Dharma. It's because when you chant Hare Krishna in association with others, in public, you're distributing the holy name to others, you're elevated, you're not in a material world anymore. That's why people are smiling, because they're seeing the spiritual world. But just like here, right? There's the Sankirtan party of Lord Chaitanya. Look what they're saying, Lord Balaram. Right? So I'm not saying, that they see Lord Balaram when they walk down the... But they are seeing the same activity, and they're observing the same experience that Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda and Haridas Thakur and it's the same Sankirtan Jagya that's established by Lord Chaitanya, and it's the same Sankirtan experience. It takes you out of the material world into the spiritual world. Right? And all of those people around are being affected by that. We're making advancement. Right? If we don't do it, we won't make the same amount of advancement as we can and should and will if we wholeheartedly embrace the Sankirtan Jagya. That means going out and doing Harinam Sankirtan. Then when you do that, you're not in the material world. And those people who observe it, they're also out of the material world. That's why they're smiling. That's why the kids are dancing. And the parents are kind of like, ooh, hey, come back here. Huh? Just like that boy who was standing behind the pole there, right? He was shy, right? He was extremely shy, about 4 years old. And actually, I don't know, the devotees weren't. But, you know, if a kid's like that, don't give him a card or give him a book. Just leave him. I maybe should mention that to them. You know, just leave him. You know, don't. The kid's so shy, but yet he's so attractive. And the parents standing back, just letting him explore, right? Then the boys with the books, they kind of pounce on the four-year-old, and it's kind of like, hey, come on, guys. He's not ready to join the ashram just yet. And he can't read the card, neither can he read the Bhagavad Gita. But he's overwhelmingly attracted to the Sankirtan party, so just let him relish that. That is going to have a powerful impact on him later on. Right? He's going to... Even it's having a powerful effect on everybody else, but he was so... That kid was just like... He couldn't... And his father tried to pull him away and he couldn't. Right? So he just left him there. He was enjoying the Sankirtan. So... If you want excitement, it's not quite the same as having your windows blown out by somebody with a shotgun. but it's challenging. It is challenging. You know, you go out on Harinam and you never know what's going to happen. You never know. And sometimes you're embarrassed because it's just a raggle-taggle. It's like... You know, Lord Ramchandra with a monkey army. it can be pretty weird. But because it's the holy name and because it's Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan Jagya, and you know, when you think about it, we're not going to be going into these people's homes and preaching to them. And, you know, how else are we going to connect with the majority of people in Melbourne? How else? There's no other way to do it, practically speaking. Go out where they are and chant Hare Krishna. Then we're experiencing bhakti and making advancement ourselves, right? Despite the fact that it's challenging, you know, and you never know who... I'll tell you something. The other day, I went to Coles to buy a cigarette lighter. Actually, it's not a cigarette lighter, it's an incense lighter. I went to buy an incense lighter, but they gave it with the cigarettes, right? So that wasn't the only thing. I got some bananas, and I got, what else did I get? Something else for a ginger river. And some batteries, that's right. So I couldn't find the cigarette lighters anywhere. So I walked up to the counter and I said, hey mate, where's the cigarette lighter? And he said, oh, behind me. So it was with the cigarettes. There was a guy standing at the counter on the other side, and he came to buy a pack of cigarettes. Huh? And he didn't like it that I'd kind of pushed in, because I didn't realise that he was there to buy a pack of cigarettes and he was first. You know, I just was asking. I was asking, you know, where's the cigarette lighters so I can go back and find it, what aisle it was in, and I'll go and get it myself. But I didn't realise that they had to go and get it for you. They don't sell matches or cigarettes openly in Coles because it's connected with cigarettes. In fact, the guy said to him, give us the cheapest cigarettes. And they said, sorry, mate, we can't tell you what the cheapest cigarettes are. You have to go around and select them for yourself. Interesting. This is law, right? So this is how tightened up it is to get cigarettes these days. He paid $20, $18 or something for a packet of cigarettes. I thought, well, stupid. But anyway, I kind of pushed in. And he said to me, hey, mate, I'm a drunk. I won't say what else he said, but... And he said, but I'm here first. Right, so he's telling me, I'm in front, so you wait for me. And I just, and he was drunk. I knew he was drunk. But I said, yeah, sure, no worries, mate. Sorry, I didn't mean to push in. Right? And then he said to me, he said, are you a Hare Krishna? And I said, yep, I'm a Hare Krishna. He said, all right, good. He said, I'll shout him his lighter. So he paid for my lighter. This guy. He paid for the lighter. And then I was thinking about, why did that guy do that? But then I realised the prasadam distribution that we do down at Port Melbourne at Yardage Street, that guy's had prasadam. So even though he's out of it and he's a drunk, and he admitted it to me, yeah, I'm a drunk, but I'm first. You know, I was in the queue first, right? So I apologised to him and I said, no worries, you know. So then he said, okay. So, you know, we can't and should never underestimate the potency of these Sankirtan activities, prasadam distribution, Harinam, book distribution, and I know it's hard for a lot of people, but we should embrace it in order to make spiritual advancement. Yes, we should study Prabhupada's books, and so education and training is important, but at the same time, if our education and training doesn't take us as individual members of ISKCON, and I'm practically, because, you know, for some reason, one or another, we may not be able to do it, but for those of us who are healthy enough and strong enough and have got the capability, we should be doing some Sankirtan. If we're not, we're not members of the Sankirtan movement. Is that right? What do you think? Too heavy?
No.
No. No, we should be doing it. It's what Lord Chaitanya did, and we're kind of, you know, he's the archetypal Hare Krishna. He's the one that started it all. Right? He taught the ABCs by doing the ABCs himself. And for us, ABCs means going out on Sankirtan. That way then, we will have a huge impact on this city. Huh? If we have enough devotees for us to be doing, I don't know, half a dozen Sankirtan parties on a Saturday morning, this is just a thought that I've had. We only do one on a Friday night, but just imagine, and that's not very convenient for a lot of people, but just imagine if we were doing, and say we only did it once a month, let's not do it every weekend, let's just do it once a month. We could have six, hey, probably even a dozen Sankirtan parties of, what, half a dozen people? But half a dozen people is pretty powerful when you think about it. Half a dozen devotees walking down the street of Frankston, or walking down the street of Werribee, you know, Werribee, the car park of Werribee Plaza. Gee, that place is huge. Now I think about it, right? But if we're doing Sankirtan in these places, people are going to think, like they used to in the 70s, God, Hare Krishna's everywhere. Right? But we want them to think that. Right? We want them to think that. Anyway, just a thought that that's been bothering me for many years, actually. We have enough devotees and they're all advanced enough. It's not like we're all wilting flowers, right? Devotees have been chanting Hare Krishna for 10 or even 15 years, okay? But who don't go on Sankirtan regularly. Even sometimes myself, I'm not going regularly enough. And I regret that. But the advantage of that is we make spiritual advancement, which is what it's all about, because we're doing what we, you know, what our spiritual master has instructed us to do, and we're exposing others to the bhakti experience. No? We're actually exposing them to the culture. So when they do come here, it's not so weird. Although it's weird. Let's face it. What we do is out there. We are one of the... I remember in... we were flying back from Bali. And this... lady was telling me how she was a vegetarian and she had the higher taste, and how she got it from her sister, and her sister was into kirtan. And she said to me, she's pretty out there, meaning I'm out there too, right? But she was very respectful and very appreciative, and was, you know, telling me with some pride that she had the higher taste. And she said, I love halva. Okay, me too. Who doesn't? So, in one sense, you know, we want to make an impact. We want to make advancement ourselves, and we want to make an impact. Prabhupada wanted us to make an impact. You know, if you're not aware that Prabhupada wanted us to make an impact, then you better read the Lilamrita. Right? Just here's a quiz. How many of you have read the Prabhupada Lilamrita? Raise your hands. Okay, what about your ever well wisher? Who's read your ever well wisher? Not enough. Okay, the rest of you guys, your service this week is read. Okay, you don't have to read the Lilamrita. It's one volume. Read your ever well wisher. If you can't read, it's on Audible. It's on. You can get it on Amazon. And you can listen to it. I'm listening to it at the moment. I'm listening to your ever well wisher at the moment. If I'm not listening to some pastimes of Prabhupada in a week, my life is dry, like a desert. I like to listen to the Prabhupada Leela. Something. And then you find out, have a guess what? Prabhupada wanted us to go on Sankirtan. In fact, you see it in the storefront at Matchless Gifts. After a couple of months, Prabhupada had his disciples, you know. Then what did he do with them? Traced them off down to Tompkins Square. And what did they do? Before that, Prabhupada had recorded the Hare Krishna record. Or was it just after? So you can see, Prabhupada wanted, and he did it himself. It's not like Prabhupada wanted us to do things that he didn't do. He did it. He took the devotees out on Sankirtan. In fact, you know, in that movie we saw on the weekend, you know, the devotees realised that the way that they could stand out in London was, what did they do? What did they realise? The way to stand out and be different in London was to what?
Shave
their heads. Pretty far out, eh? The devotees did stand out, because in those days the fashion was grow your hair long. Then when I saw the Hare Krishnas with bald heads, I thought, I'm not getting involved with those guys. I want to keep my hair. Anyway, that's our excitement. That's our challenge. That's our warfare, actually. You know, if we want to be engaged in warfare, if you like excitement, you want a bit of warfare, it's out on the streets. Book distribution, that's a hand-to-hand combat, right? Yeah, is that right, Monica? She was enjoying the Harinam party last night by doing book distribution. Okay, Gwantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Harinam Sankirtana Ki Jai.